Bankless Nation, is a third week of July. It's time for the Bankless Weekly Rollup. David, it is crypto week this week, okay? That's not just
me talking crypto this week?
Yeah, no, this is Donald Trump declaring it crypto week. He said,
what?
Happy crypto week. Did you see this?
Where did he say this?
You said this on Truth Social. Yeah. And the reason why is because the Genius Bill is in front of the House, as well as the Clarity Act, some other House bills for crypto. So he's declaring you and everybody at Bankless a happy crypto week. We got to talk about the Genius
Bill. It is a happy crypto week. I felt that actually this week.
Okay, so the Genius Bill, at the time of recording, we don't know whether it has passed or not, but I'm going to go ahead and say it passed. Okay? Bankless listeners, they're living the future. We're recording this on Thursday. The bill is going up for vote at 4 p.m. today. We don't know the outcome yet.
Right.
You guys do. I think it passed, David. Okay? Hold me to that prediction.
I'm assuming that it's passing, is going to pass. And also, I don't think that that is why the market has pumped, especially Ethereum has pumped. I think that the market will pump more as a result of this passing.
After it passes?
Okay. After it passes.
Oh, it has passed, of course.
It has passed.
Yes. Also, we got to talk about Bitcoin. Hit an all-time high. We got another all-time high week back-to-back. But I do feel like all eyes are on Ether this week. Because
there's not been a Bitcoin story this week.
No, there's been a vibe change. We talked about that last week. But now we've got ETFs, ETH ETFs, breaking all-time high records. We also have Tom Lee saying he wants to buy 5% of all ETH supply. That's a true story.
How much? That's like 6 million Ether.
That's a lot.
And he is not anywhere close to 6 million Ether right now.
Now he's got to work his way up, but he's getting there.
And then, of course, I'll cover the Pump Fun ICO because we don't want Ryan to do that. How did it go? Who bought in? What happened afterwards? And then Coinbase launched its Everything app, brand new release out of Coinbase. We're entering in the world where crypto companies like Robinhood, Coinbase, they are doing their own internal, like, you know, jazzy marketing campaigns, marketing like streams, like Steve Jobs-esque.
Yeah.
And they're doing they're doing their own roadshows in their own kind of context, which is pretty cool. We're going to talk about the Roman Storm trial as well. And remember that one time the Polymarket founder got raided by the FBI?
Yeah.
We're going to hear more about that story as well. But first, before we get into the markets and talk about all the different ETH treasury companies that are up like 40% on the week, we're going to first talk about fundamentals. And all those fundamentals you're going to hear are at the Bankless Summit. The Bankless Summit is a one-day event that we are throwing at DevConnect. We are recruiting all the greatest speakers in Ethereum to give 20 to 30-minute talks, no panels, just straight information about Ethereum. The newest speaker is Donna from L2Beat. He is joining the ranks to talk about native rollups and all the research that he's going there. But we've also got Justin Drake, Ansgar, Tamash, Arjun, Uma Roy. It's going to be a who's who. It's a TED Talks for Ethereum, the second day of DevConnect. So if you are going to DevConnect in Buenos Aires, which I highly recommend, because all you're going to go do is you're going to go down to Buenos Aires, you're going to talk about ETH, you're going to eat steak, you're going to drink Malbec, and then you're going to talk about Ether some more. I don't know why anyone wouldn't want to go to Buenos Aires. They are the people that adopted stablecoins and Ether. They are the people that built MakerDAO. They are the people over at Open Zeppelin. It's a great place to just be a crypto person. And then once you're done being a crypto person, you just eat steak. It's great. Anyways, I'm very excited about it. This is, again, happening the Tuesday of DevConnect. Get your tickets before I increase the prices. Prices are $80 right now. They will not be $80 in the future. They are going to track ETH. And so they will be about $160 by the time we run around to DevConnect.
That's an ETH price prediction, okay? That's a 6K ETH if I'm running the math right. No, 7K ETH.
No, 7K.
Oh my God. Yeah. Wow, we are bullish on the week. Let's talk a little bit about Bitcoin price because we got an all-time high this week. Mm-hmm. Not quite at the time of recording, but previous to that, what did we hit and where are we at right now?
We are currently coming in at $19,000. Bitcoin is up 7% on the week, a good old 7%. The new all-time high, $122,800. I think it did hit $123,000, $100,000. So a pretty
some
good
charts,
number
I guess.
There. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it fell off all the way. It crashed, Ryan. Bitcoin crashed this week from $123,000 all the way down to $116,000. And has since come up to $119,000.
See, they always told not to buy because it would crash.
It always crashes every time.
Not only
that's why you never buy Bitcoin.
Well, you know, part of the story of this cycle, of course, has been the infinite institutional bid for Bitcoin, the asset. And you're seeing that in no better place to see that than in BlackRock's iBit. So BlackRock's iBit, of course, is the BlackRock Bitcoin ETF. It just became the fastest ever to hit 80 million in AUM. And David, I got to tell you, It's not even
80 billion. 80 billion. Oh,
my billion. God! Did I say million?
You said million. I'm
gonna up those those numbers here. Eighty billion.
Bear got in your mind.
Okay, but look at this chart. It's like oh, it's the fastest ever. Okay, nothing else is close. All right,
it's 4 times faster than the nearest competitors.
It looks like
The nearest competitors are like all within a pretty similar range to each other, like pretty neck and neck. And then Bitcoin is like, I am 4 times faster than all of you.
This is why Wall Street is so bullish on crypto assets this cycle, is because they're providing a lot of the capital flows here. The question is Bitcoin fair market value or not? Well, if you look at some charts, like the long-term holder net unrealized profit and loss, the NUPL, okay? This is basically how up are Bitcoin holders. I believe it's a measure, it's that kind of measure. We're actually not in froth market territory, okay? We're between point...
The NUPLs are not frothy.
Yeah, the NUPLs are not frothy, not yet at least. We're somewhere at 0.69, and that's the below the 0.69 NUPLs, huh? Have I been sabotaged with this week's agenda? My God, is this even a real metric? Forget this. Let's go to the classic rainbow chart.
I like
chart.
This chart much better. This is the classic Eric Wall rainbow price chart. It's way easier
no
to
nupples
understand
on this chart
than long-term holder net unrealized profit loss. What the fuck is that? No, you just look at the rainbow chart. We are clearly still on the lower side of the rainbow chart. We are
rainbow
in the accumulation zone. We are not in the massive deal. We are not in the fire sale. We are not in the buy section. We're in the accumulation zone, which is a modestly leaning bias towards buying, but not overly so. But we are definitely on the lower side of the Bitcoin price. What we want to do is we want to get into the yellows and oranges slowly. We want to get into the yellows and oranges in like 2027, which would put Bitcoin somewhere between $1 and $2 million if we got to the orange red area where like FOMO is happening, and then also it's a sell signal. Yeah,
this is a much better. I feel set up. I think I was set up with this week's agenda talking about.
I gave you the opportunity to kill the car, but you just walked right into that one.
All right, you wanted to talk about this, so there's a new denomination.
I think this is so cool. We all like to talk about price. You know, Bitcoin is only 21 million.
Yeah,
you know, price targets, blah 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 blah. There's also like the cultural element of Bitcoin acceptance and like, you know, the tolerableness of Bitcoin. And this is an indication that Bitcoin is just becoming so understood.
Do you remember the first time we got into the Bloomberg terminals? That was huge. That was a huge moment for us, right?
And Bitcoin was like $3,000 or $7,000 or something.
Okay.
Okay. The cool thing that's happening right now, maybe this is small. Maybe I'm over hyping this.
Yeah.
But if you want to go look at Bitcoin in the Bloomberg terminals, the pricing chart on the right side, like the graph where you see the prices, the little tick marks, they are denominated in millions of dollars. So right now, on the price of a Bitcoin, according to Bloomberg, when you go up and open up Bloomberg, you see a Bitcoin price of $0.112 million. Not $112,000 or whatever. You see it denominated in millions of dollars, which means if it implied it's going to be worth millions of dollars. Like it wouldn't be worth $1 million. People don't assume it's going to hit 1 point something or 2 point something. The fact that we are denominated publicly on mainstream society, that we are denominating Bitcoin in millions of dollars, I think is a huge historic cultural milestone.
I choose to believe that. And also you need to make room on the graphs, right? So yeah. Every 10x, you gotta move the point somewhere, right?
Right.
So pretty soon we're gonna denominate in like what, I don't know, tens of millions of dollars.
Maybe.
Yeah. Is that what's next for Bitcoin?
Well, I mean, once we hit a million? I think Bitcoin needs to get to $1 million, and then we can start talking about that.
Yeah, this cycle. You think that's happening this cycle?
Well, what I just said. Yeah, sometime in 2027, $1 to $2 million Bitcoin.
That's what the nupples tell you, or the rainbow?
That's what the rainbow tells me.
Yeah. Okay.
But the nupples are also pointing in that direction.
We've had enough here. Let's get to the ETH price on the week. This is tell us about ETH price. I am very excited about this number, but why don't I let you say it?
The number for ETH, $3,420, up 23%. Not just double digits, but double digits with a two handle on it. Mostly driven by massive ETH treasury accumulation. I woke up every single day to three different ETH treasury companies announcing their purchasing of somewhere between $10 and $300 million of ETH. And I got confused as like, okay, was this yesterday's announcement or is this tomorrow's announcement? Yeah. Which announcement is this? Is this a repeat from the last one? Which
just like,
which BTCS
exactly
like MNBT like treasury company is doing this? I don't know. They're all just buying. Each one is buying like somewhere between like 20, 10, I think it's like 20 was the smallest number that I heard, like $20 million. And then the largest I heard is like $300 million. But it just happened. It was just a big week. And then on top of that, we're going to talk about this. ETH ETF inflows had its largest number ever. So BlackRock ETH ETF took in $500 million of ETH. For a total combined 700 million dollars of inflows.
726 million yesterday. That's all time. That's the biggest inflows ever for Ether, the asset, in the ETF by far.
It was a big week for ETH.
Really big week. Also, kind of close to flipping Bitcoin on the daily. Remember, that's a kind of a
in terms of daily, which is already massive because Bitcoin is still four times larger than ETH right now.
It is massive. We've got some other measures of that. Maybe we'll just talk about that for a second. So this is Nate Gerasi saying we have record daily inflows for spot ETH ETFs, nearly 720 million, obliviates the previous mark of 430 million.
Obliviates.
Just obliviates. Oh, obliterates. I'm using Harry Potter language. That's how bullish I am. Okay. If you want to get into Anthony Sassana level bullishness, though.
Oh, yeah.
That's, you can look.
I don't know. You can't go any higher than that. You start to become.
Yeah, that's max. That's like, you know, you're power maxed at Anthony Sassana, you know, bullishness. So he likes to do this, and he's been doing this on the daily basis. He likes to take the net inflows, and then he looks likes to look at the net ETH issuance. So we got net ETH inflows of about 720 million. And do you know how much ETH supply was minted that same day, David?
Not that much. Less than that.
6.7 million. Okay. So I'm not going to use the words ultrasound money here because that's not what we're talking about. But we are talking about like a lack of supply in this market because this is the demand, the inflow demand was 110x. The amount of supply issued. Okay. So much so that there are reports of OTC desks running out of ETH. Mm-hmm. Okay.
This Wintermute just said that. Wintermute said, yeah, we don't have any ETH on our desks. Everyone bought it. Yeah, can I be nitpicky about Sazzle's tweet?
No. This is bull mode. Oh, we'll allow it. Okay.
Okay.
You get one bearish thing. Go.
This is what he's doing is he's like kind of using the whole. This happened with the early days of the Bitcoin treasuries too. But the difference here is actually wait a second. This is a bullish interpretation of Anthony's tweet. Oh. Bitcoin miners have to sell their ETH, and so when we look at the
wait, what?
Net
Bitcoin miners have to sell their ETH. You lost me on that.
When Bitcoin miners when Bitcoin miners mine Bitcoin. And
yes,
they have to sell the Bitcoin to pay for the expenses because it's very competitive, very low margins.
Yep.
And so when the sailor was accumulating like three times more than the Bitcoin mining sell pressure, there was bullish Bitcoin because like, oh, well, like all the supply is being soaked up by like Michael Saylor and the Bitcoin treasuries. Yeah. Anthony is doing that same thing of alluding to that same effect. And it's just even more like there's an even larger discrepancy here between the $720 million that was purchased versus the $6.7 million dollars of ETH that was minted. But the thing is, are you staking ETH, Ryan?
I'm staking ETH.
Do you sell the ETH rewards that you accrue?
It depends. I mean, mostly not because I continue to be bullish at these prices.
Yeah, and so you just stake that ETH too, right? That's what most ETH stakers do. They stake their ETH and then they get
sometimes
ETH rewards.
Less their tax bills. But
less their tax bills. Whatever. Yeah. you pay for those in other ways. You take when you stake ETH stakers, when they stake ETH, they take their ETH rewards and they stake them again. They keep on accumulating the stake because they don't have very much costs. So you don't have to sell.
Right.
And there's not even any sell pressure there.
It's actually
just accumulation. There's just accumulation going on.
Yes. And the story behind the last bull market, again, we talk about, put this in perspective, right? We're not even at ETH all-time highs. We're not even at December all-time highs. December,
we are still 40% off of all-time highs.
Yeah, okay. So like at some level, this is a pump for ants still, okay?
We still have a lot more to go.
I mean, 2021 was crazy. Do you remember all of that 2020, 2021? We were range bound from like 150 to 300 for a very long time. And then explosion upwards.
I went to $4,100.
Yeah. People don't remember that era of what ETH can actually do. But at that time, what was really interesting is the ETH monetary schedule kind of sucked. Issuance was like, what, like 5% or something? This was pre-merge?
It was like 3 ETH per block in a proof of work context. Yeah, it wasn't great.
Yeah, it wasn't great. This time around, you have much less supply. Yeah. Annual issuance is like 0.45%.
Mm-hmm. We have not seen ETH in a bull market under the paradigm of both proof of stake and EIP 1559, which came in 2023 and 2024, 2022 and 2023, respectively.
See?
Yeah.
The other thing I saw this week, which was interesting, there were actually days where Bitcoin was down, but ETH was
down in dollars and ETH was up in dollars
on the 24 hour. And again, this is segments of time, but I just like, do you remember the last time we've seen this?
That has not happened in a long time.
Sometimes you've had days where ETH outperforms Bitcoin, right? Those have been rare, but I can't even remember a day this cycle where Bitcoin's actually gone down and ETH has gone up. So this is some more story of the winds changing here. We got more to talk about ETH in the treasury section. We're not done.
We're not talking about ETH.
But do you want to
talk about macro really fast though?
Yeah. You want to know what happened here
in macro world?
Yeah, in macro world, in TradFi world.
Can you start with, is it bullish or bearish?
Oh, actually, before we get to that, can we just check in on coin crypto market cap? Because I feel like we might be all-time highs or close to
it. We are tied for all-time highs on the crypto market cap. We are $3.9 trillion. We hit $3.9 trillion 4 months ago, 5 months ago.
Oh, wow.
So we are tied for a total crypto market cap. And that is inclusive of Bitcoin dominance being very high.
Good stuff. Yeah. All right, here's what's going on in macro. So we had some CPI numbers in the report. Inflation picked up a little bit, but like it really wasn't that bad. It just ticked up a little bit, but it was pretty much as expected. And I think the big story here, the numbers, 12 month was at 2.7%. This is still the highest since February, but pretty much in line with expectations. Do you know the story that was going on like 3 or 4 months ago about tariffs causing inflation? We just haven't really seen that in the data yet. In fact, if you look at Polymarket compared to that point in time where you had US recession odds in 2025 at about 64% during a tariff craziness, it's down to about 20%. Now, of course, we have less time in the year, so the prediction gets a little more crisp, but 20%. So recession fears have kind of evaporated from the market pretty much. Mm-hmm. And Trump, of course, used this as an opportunity to beat Powell over the head. He said, consumer prices low, bring down the Fed rate now. He's talking to Powell, of course, about this. And I don't know if you saw this, David, but there was actually the New York Times reported that President Trump actually drafted a letter to fire Chair Powell. All right. So he had the letter all drafted. Got to wonder what that letter said. But he had the letter. This is what the New York
Times reported. I'm sure it was extremely cordial and respectful.
Okay. But then reporters asked Trump, do you have the letter? Have you drafted a letter? They say Trump said, I haven't drafted a letter. Reporter said,
I have concepts of a letter.
Trump's the reporter goes, so you didn't show it to Republican lawmakers last night? This is what the New York Times was reporting. Uh-huh. I talked about the concept of firing Powell.
No!
Exactly what he said.
No! He actually said the word concept.
Yeah, this is a quote.
He did it again.
It's verbatim.
The guy's a fucking meme lord, dude.
It's great. It's great. So Trump on Jerome Powell, he said he's a terrible Fed chair. I was surprised he was appointed, apparently forgetting to remember that he was the guy that originally appointed Powell, actually. So it's all, you know, unreal. Great stuff. But
what a circus.
It is a circus. I mean, lots of clippable stuff you can talk about on the week. But the bottom line for me is like, what's the probability that Jerome Powell is out as the Fed chair? Again, this would be unprecedented. Never happened in U.S. history.
Right.
Polymarket gives that an odds of about 21% chance. Happening this year. Okay. So it's still pretty low odds.
Pretty low odds. Can I get my macro take?
Yeah.
I don't want to rock the boat. I think if you are just like irrationally or uber bullish, you want Trump to fire the Powell so that he can like lower down interest rates.
Do you think you want that? That's, I don't know if you want that.
I think that's naive. I think some like naive bulls are like, yeah, just cut the interest rates. Fire Powell cut the interest rates. Let's fucking take this to the moon, which will probably happen. And then there will be a massive hangover all throughout 2022. And it's going to just delay further wealth. Like, it's short-term wealth. It's short-term wealth.
I don't even know if it's, like, who knows how the market might react to that. Yeah. They might react in the opposite way. They might be like, okay, the you know, central bank impartiality is totally screwed. The U.S. is gone down.
I think that's a black swan. I think we don't want to rock the boat. We have a good thing going right now. The SPY, the S&P 500, is up 2.5% from its peak in January, right before the tariff dip. So if you just ignore the tariffs, we're at all-time highs right now. Like, things are good. Like, let's just not keep it going. I mean, don't change anything.
I'm kind of inclined to agree with Polymarket that I don't think it's going to happen. It's like 20%. But the odds that Trump continues to talk shit about Jerome Powell, what are the odds of that?
Yeah.
What are the odds of that?
I don't want. Powell's doing fine.
Give that 100% odds. Okay, coming up next, David, we got to talk about this race to $1 billion in ETH treasuries. Seems like all of these treasuries are racing. And we may have a winner already on the week. Somebody first to $1 billion in ETH. Also, we've got more Bitcoin.
$1 billion of ETH.
$1 billion of ETH.
I need to specify about that because we're going to talk about that later.
More Bitcoin mining companies. They're pivoting to ETH treasuries. And also, Peter Thiel is making a big bet.
Peter Thiel has entered the chat. Yeah.
And you got to tell me more about the Coinbase wallet turning into a super app, an everything app. They've got a big revamp. We'll have some videos and more. But before we do, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible, including Uniswap. They are a browser wallet. They are a mobile wallet. They are the best place to do DeFi. Go check them out.
Ethereum's Layer 2 universe is exploding with choices. But if you're looking for the best place to park and move your tokens, make your next stop Unichain. First, liquidity. Unichain hosts the most liquid Uniswap V4 deployment on any Layer 2, giving you deeper pools for flagship pairs like ETH-USDC. More liquidity means better prices, less slippage, and smoother swaps. Exactly what traders crave. The numbers back it up. Unichain leads all Layer 2s in total value locked for Uniswap V4. And it's not just deep. It's fast and fully transparent, purpose-built to be the home base for DeFi and cross-chain liquidity. When it comes to costs, Unichain is a no-brainer. Transaction fees come in about 95% cheaper than Ethereum mainnet, slashing the price of creating or accessing liquidity. Want to stay in the loop on Unichain? Visit unichain.org or follow at Unichain on X for all the updates. Ever wonder how industry-leading companies like Coinbase, MetaMask, and Phantom Wallet build products that always stay ahead of market shifts and new token listings? It's because they all use the CoinGecko API, the most reliable and comprehensive crypto data API, backed by a rock-solid 99.9% uptime SLA. Builders, analysts, and businesses rely on CoinGecko for real-time data on 9 million cryptocurrencies across 1,500 exchanges and 200 different networks. It goes beyond crypto prices to access liquidity, OHLCV, DEX data, metadata, NFT floor prices, and more, enabling your team to build and scale powerful products like wallets, oracles, exchanges, AI agents, and DeFi applications without limitations. Onboarding is easy with clear documentation and enterprise-grade support that answers you faster than Finality, 24/7 around the clock. Supercharge your product and build with CoinGecko API today. Head to gcko.io/bankless10 and enter code bankless10 for 10% off any plan. CoinGecko API, crypto's most trusted and reliable data source. Imagine if your checking account and DeFi wallet finally spoke the same language. That's Mantle Banking, an all-in-one fiat and crypto account. It lets you save, spend, and invest all from one dashboard. Swipe for coffee, stake ME for yield, or even use virtual cards for payments through Apple Pay. So it feels Web 2 simple, yet stays Web 3 sovereign. For allocators, meet Mantle Index 4, the S&P 500 of crypto, a tokenized institutional-grade fund seeded with $400 million from the Mantle Treasury and balanced across Bitcoin, Ether, Sol, and yield-enhanced stables. One asset, broad exposure, pure DeFi composability. The momentum is real. METH vaults, FBTC bridges, and a $2.4 billion community treasury are all powering the next phase of on-chain finance. Mantle brings real-world access, yield, and utility to digital assets. Ready for the next era of on-chain finance that actually belongs in 2025? Explore Mantle at mantle.xyz or follow mantle_official. Mantle, bridging TradFi and DeFi so you don't have to.
Okay, we got maybe the first to $1 billion worth of ETH in treasuries. It's been a race, and I gotta say, the race may have concluded earlier than I thought. It's like, it's moving faster. We've got number one. This is a strategic ETH reserve, by the way. I'm gonna filter by treasury companies here. We got a new number one, and it's just over $1 billion in ETH, worth of ETH. That's 300,000. This is BitMine Immersion Technologies. Okay, this is Tom Lee's.
Tom Lee. This is Tom Team Lee. Tom Lee. This is the horse that Tom Lee is the jockey of.
He's riding. Yeah, he's riding this Bitcoin.
He's riding, and he's in the lead.
Technology horse.
He's in
and
the lead.
He just took the lead, okay? Kind of last minute. It looked like Sharplink Gaming was going to be
first. Joe Lubin. That's Joe Lubin's the jockey of Sharplink Gaming.
Yep, that's SBET. We'll talk maybe more about these tickers. Maybe people will remember. Maybe they'll forget like I do almost on a weekly basis. We got so many tickers going on. But Lubin with SBET, he got up to 960 million, at least publicly disclosed. He may have more that's not yet been publicly disclosed, but will be. So just short of a billion. So David, Tom Lee may have won the first round here to a $1 billion worth of ETH.
I think that's great for him. $1 billion of ETH, but he's at 300,000 Ether-ish, and Joe Lubin's at 280,000 Ether. Like, the better number is who's first to 1 million Ether.
Oh, okay, okay. But
I think that's a much better race, because it's roughly three times more than what we need, where we're at right now, and it's ETH-denominated, and so the ETH price doesn't, like, actually... Because then we're measuring dollars of ETH price, and we just... Why denominate in dollars? Like, okay. It's millions of ETH on the balance sheet is what we want.
Okay, Tom's thinking the same thing, David. He's already ahead of that line of thought, okay? This is a quote from Tom Lee. We are well about Bitmine. We are well on our way to achieving our goal of acquiring and staking 5% of overall ETH supply. David, Tom Lee wants to buy 5% of total ETH supply. What are we talking about? What's the math on that? If you want to do ETH denominated, what's ETH denominated 5% of total supply?
We are at 120 million. So times 0.05 is 6. 6 million ETH. Tom Lee wants 6 million ETH.
He's got 300,000 now. He's got 300,000. He wants to get to 6 million.
He's basically at zero. He basically doesn't have any ETH.
That is probably one Michael Saylor worth of ETH supply if you do the comp to Bitcoin, right? what does Saylor have? 3-4%?
No, he has 3%. Maybe he has 3%.
Maybe it's 2.5. He's trying to do a 2x Saylor.
All right, I've got the number. It's at 2.86% is Michael Saylor.
This is MicroStrategy. I should say.
MicroStrategy. Michael Saylor. Strategy owns 2.86% of the total Bitcoin supply.
All right.
So Tom Lee wants 6%. And Joseph Lubin wants to beat him there.
He said 5%.
5%.
He says 5%. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And Joseph Lubin, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Yes.
It's actually interesting. SBET actually has more ETH now publicly than the Ethereum Foundation. Okay,
so the Ethereum Foundation made a sale of ETH this week to do their normal funding operations, but they just sold it to MicroStrategy, to SBET, to Joe Lubin. So it never actually hit the order books.
Yeah.
And everyone was very bullish about that. It's like, oh, the EF's not going to dump on us. They can just buy it. They're just going to get absorbed by SBET. But like also at the same time, it's just neutral, because then the SBET dollars don't actually hit the order books.
This news came in. I don't know if this is recent, but it just came in with the Edgar filings. I can't believe I'm talking about Edgar filings. Okay, this is where SEC
publishes. One of us has to do it.
Okay. Peter Thiel bought 9% of Tom Lee's ETH treasury company. That's the Bitmine. Okay, so Peter Thiel is in on all of this too. He's providing some of the capital for, I guess, these ETH purchases. That seems kind of bullish to me, of big money, institutional money coming into these ETH treasury products. The thing is, too, there's more coming. Okay, so it's not just these companies. There's other horses that are going to enter this race. I'm pretty certain of that. Maybe let's look at the stock prices here. These are the ETH treasury companies that are all, you know, publicly traded in the U.S. So the first is SBET. So this is Sharplink. Look at this chart.
That is an unreal chart. That is a chart that just is a parabola up starting at the very beginning of July.
Okay, but before that, do you remember that? Do you remember this bump right here?
That weird spike where it was announced and it had already pumped from like $1 up to $50, and then it crashed back down, and then everyone on Twitter was like grave dancing on it. That was such a weird... What happened there?
What happened?
It was like such a low float like thing to do, and then it seems like just a bunch more float has hit the market.
Yeah,
the market's behaving much more orderly right now.
It is, but this was literally, I think, crypto investors misinterpreting the Edgar filings, the SEC filings. They thought all the original holders of this were like exit selling. They misinterpreted it. People were wrong. And it's since not fully recovered, but it's back to 34. Actually,
I don't think there was much volume. So, sorry, go back there and look at the volume under the very big spike that happened in June.
Oh, yeah.
Just no volume. Oh, absolutely no volume.
Good point.
And so like people were like, oh, like Joseph Lubin and ETH people are dumping on you. It's like it hit $100 for a blip because like people were FOMO. We were trying to like snipe it. Now the volumes under it are like 10 times larger than when it was at like $100.
Okay, this is BitMine. So this is the BMNR. This is the Tom Lee. I can't believe we're looking at stocks so much on this. Okay.
Dude, it's stonk season, man.
Okay, so I don't know what this chart is showing you. Like I don't really know.
It looks like that one mountain in the Midwest I'd like to climb.
This is Bit Digital, another mountain maybe you want to climb here. Is because it's going up. It's a nice ascent here from.
SBET has all the price action. All of these are just not really doing what SBET is doing.
Yeah, and then there's BT. This one's nice. BTCS.
Yes.
These are what I'm quoting are the top four. And if you're noticing all the B's in these ticker symbols, it's because it used to be Bitcoin mining companies.
Yeah, like these are all Bitcoin miners, which is kind of interesting that Bitcoin miners are like, you know what? Mining sucks. Yeah. We're going to accumulate ETH.
Literally. I mean, this is the founder of Bit Digital told us. We have an episode coming out with the founder of Bit Digital. And he basically said it was a shit. He said it was a shit business.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so instead, they've diversified into staking ETH, which is also validating a chain. Right. There's another company that just this morning, another Bitcoin company pivoting to ETH. This is BTC Digital. Mm-hmm. This is something we hadn't talked about yet. This is BTCT. You got another B acronym.
Another
here.
One. I wonder how far this is, the brand of this is indicative. Like, does Wall Street notice like all of these are Bitcoin mining companies becoming ETH treasury companies? And do they take that into account as to like what's going on? Because like my narrative here as a crypto native who's familiar with these subjects is like, oh, yes, this is highly indicative of Bitcoin's long-term security problems. And you're actually seeing Bitcoin miners being like, okay, well, we are not paid much by Bitcoin. You're not paid enough to keep on doing what we're doing.
Yeah.
So let's do something else. And all of a sudden, when something good lands on their doorstep, they immediately jump ship to that other good thing, which is ETH, which has a sustainable... I mean, I don't know. They don't really have to do the CapEx expenditure of ASIC mining and like electricity and all that stuff. They're just doing the ETH.
Well, the CapEx is buying ETH. That's
CapEx is buying ETH. But like, yeah, right. But that doesn't deteriorate like the electricity and the actual hardware that they would have to buy. So it's a better business. And to me, that is indicative of the security budget story that we've told for years.
I think that's a longer term story. I think probably Wall Street is not looking at that right now. I think right now they're just looking at, oh my God, could this be the next Bitcoin? Right. ? Right. And they're very excited about that. And it looks like it's a treasury asset from early indications. One other thing that the Strategic ETH Reserve actually added was the price to the MNAV.
Okay, a very key metric.
Yeah, this is the premium above basically the assets, the ETH assets under
higher
the
is better
companies. Well, higher is more of a premium. Higher is more expensive. Like, I don't know necessarily if it's better. True. It depends on like, you know, if you own it, it's better. If you're a buyer,
it's not great for the buyers. If you already own it, it's better because that means that's the premium that you're getting. For ETH holders, you want to see higher. Higher means that there's more premium to squeeze to buy more ETH. So the premium eventually turns into buy pressure for ETH.
Yeah, I think that's true. Also, I think it's indicative of froth potentially in the future, right? There's a time where these premiums will go down. And
there is a time where the premiums will be under one. But when they're above one, we're
not yet. Anyway, so we got a range, SBET is 2.63 MNAV, whereas Tom Lee is 2.19 MNAV. Anyway, investors can look at this and all the data is on the Strategic ETH Reserve. So, wow, that's the treasury story. It seemed to come out of nowhere. David, there's also another treasury on the scene this week. I don't know if you saw this. This is the Hype token getting its own treasury. Sonnet Biotherapeutics.
This is its second treasury reserve company, Hype's second treasury reserve company, which is pretty crazy. This new company will hold 12.6 million Hype tokens at $570 billion. They also have $305 million of cash, which they are going to use to buy Hype. And then also the investors in this, you will hear and recognize their names: Paradigm, Galaxy Digital, Pantera, Republic Digital. Paradigm co-founder Matt Huang said, "We've been investors in Hyperliquid since November 2024. We keep hearing from our TradFi friends that they'd like easier access." So I'm pretty sure Paradigm just like had their hype bags, and then they did the in-kind investment into this new vehicle, and then
they were able
to get shares back. Yeah. And so now they have the shares, and they're like, why do you want those? Well, because they traded a premium.
Yeah.
It's a free premium.
That's the thing, is as excited as I am about all of these treasury entities, particularly for ETH and kind of the propagation of, you know, ETH as a reserve asset, treasury reserve asset first, right? You can also start to see the signs of how this gets too bubbly and too frothy, mm-hmm. and almost how it ends, right? So some of these are funded by, this goes for all treasuries, in-kind contributions, as you said. Mm-hmm. So somebody already has a bag, let's say, of Ether or Bitcoin or Hype, and they just contribute it to this entity before it goes public, essentially. And then they get an MNAV premium, okay? And then they can, quote unquote, exit to retail, all right? I'm not saying that's what's happening yet, but you start to, always in the beginnings of these big narrative, like exciting bubble type things, you can sort of, if you squint hard enough, you can see how it's also going to end.
Right.
So be excited now. And also, at some point in time, probably it's going to get overheated and buyer beware. I don't think we're close to that yet, but you can see a little bit.
I don't know if it's necessarily retail. It's squeezing the juice out of public markets, sure. out of the TradFi markets, retail included, but also also large investors, right? Like whoever is buying in their brokerage, that's who is paying for the premium. And that's the premium converts into buying the L1 asset.
Let's talk about another exciting retail product that Coinbase just rolled out. This is the Base app. So I believe this used to be, David, correct me if I'm wrong, this used to be the Coinbase wallet, and they've rebranded
Toshi. Toshi turned into Coinbase wallet. Yeah, it used to be called the Toshi wallet.
That's a long time ago. I remember
that.
Which was
Brian Armstrong's like cat or something, or dog?
Okay, so that was a long time ago. I don't think most people even remember. Yeah. Congrats if you remember what Toshi was. But then Coinbase Wallet, now it's the base app, basically.
The base app.
But it's totally revamped. So they've added a bunch of things. What have they added here?
It's just that Coinbase and Base and Jesse really leaning into on-chain social. So they're just continuing to double, triple down on the whole on-chain social thing. So it is a Farcaster client. So when you go on there, it's Farcaster. It's their own client. So their competitor to Warpcast. And so you can do tweets and all the things that Warpcast, Farcaster allows you to do. You can buy.
They're using the Farcaster protocol, important.
Exactly.
Yes?
Exactly. Yeah. And so you can tweet and you can share out tokens that you buy and do any of the other features that Farcaster has. Zora Markets, for example. There's like ENS. Then there's also payments. And then they're doing the whole mini app thing. So there is an open graph for mini apps as well. They brand it as an everything app. It's a super app, is what Brian Armstrong called it. And so it does a bunch of different things. There's also an encrypted chat. And then you can just like trade tokens and, like I said, make payments. And so kind of encroaching on world apps territory, because they're doing the mini apps too. Telegram, the Tom blockchain, also doing mini apps. So mini apps are a thing. And now the Base app is also doing this. They like emphasis on really leaning into the creator economy. They had a Gary V and People Pleaser and one other creator that wasn't familiar who talked about how NFTs and the creator economy just helped them with their careers. So they were kind of doing like a narrative campaign for the creator economy and like branded it with the Base app. Pretty cool presentation.
Well, all the posts can be minted, right? To your point about the creator. So they've also integrated Zora. What I think is interesting here is it just feels like it's a coming together of a whole bunch of narratives from like circa 2015, 2016 for Ethereum. So you got money, okay? Right. That's obviously stable coins. That's Ether, the asset. You have identity. So they've integrated ENS in this thing. So you have one single identity. You also have socials. So this is the Farcaster platform. That's a little Web3E. And then you also have the ability to create mint posts. That's the creator economy stuff. You have markets. So you got Uniswap in here, very easy to trade things. You've got all of the DEXs in here. And then you've got the communication protocol XMTP, which is decentralized, permissionless communication. And they slapped it all together in a nice, polished, retail-friendly, user-friendly front end. So this is like, this almost feels like the contours of crypto's version of a super app, of an everything app. I haven't used this yet, so I'm looking at videos at this point in time, but I could see some potential here. I could see it all coming together.
Yeah. Yeah. It is definitely a dream come true from very early narratives up to like 2021, 2022 on-chain social, like you said. I was listening to this presentation and I was like, I don't think this app is for me. Like, I'm still yet to become a post collector or things of that nature. And this is, I feel like this is kind of like a shared sentiment. Like, I want Coinbase to do this and to win and to make this a reality and to take on-chain social mainstream and have like collecting content in the creator economy. I want that to work. It doesn't work for me. And I don't think my
peers... When's the last time you've been on Farcaster? Has it been a
while? Well, I was perusing through this this app yesterday, not on my phone, but on a friend's phone who had the access to it.
It's like Farcaster's kind of putting it together. Yeah. I go on Farcaster and I enjoy it. I also feel like it's somewhat overwhelming with all of kind of the mini app experience, but it's evolving very fast. I don't know. I mean, I think it might be for you, David. Maybe not yet, but...
The creator economy and coining content, and I don't...
You don't want to coin your post? Look at this post. This is a perfect kind of post to coin. This is Brian Armstrong and Jesse from Base, Jesse Pollock from Base, doing a little fist bump handshake kind of exchange here.
That was a nice moment.
And I think they are going to coin that on the Coinbase Base app. So there you go.
I'm supportive of Jesse and I want him to win. I have not been coining content pilled.
You haven't been, you coined any content yet?
I have not. No, I have not.
What do we got coming up, man?
Coming up next, Crypto Week in DC, the Genius Bill. We're going to talk about that. We talked about it in the intro. And then also Pump Fun just became the world's third largest ICO to ever come out of crypto. We're going to talk about all that details and more. But first, a message from some of these fantastic sponsors that make the show possible, like Frax and their Frax stablecoin. It's got some of the best yields in DeFi. It's kind of like Circle, Athena, MakerDAO all had a baby, but if they also had a layer two as well. Let's go hear from Frax right now.
In the wild west of DeFi, stability and innovation are everything, which is why you should check out Frax Finance, the protocol revolutionizing stablecoins, DeFi, and roll-ups. The core of Frax Finance is Frax USD, which is backed by BlackRock's institutional Biddle Fund. Frax designed Frax USD for best-in-class yields across DeFi, T-bills, and carry trade returns all in one. Just head to frax.com, then stake it to earn some of the best yields in DeFi. Want even more? Bridge your Frax USD over to the Fractal Layer 2 for the same yield plus Fractal points and explore Fractal's diverse Layer 2 ecosystem with protocols like Curve, Convex, and more, all rewarding early adopters. Frax isn't just a protocol. It's a digital nation powered by the FXS token and governed by its global community. Acquire FXS through Frax.com or your go-to DEX, stake it, and help shape Frax Nation's future. Ready to join the forefront of DeFi? Visit Frax.com now to start earning with Frax USD and staked Frax USD. And for Bankless listeners, you can use frax.com/r/bankless when bridging to Fractal for exclusive Fractal perks and boosted rewards. Binance is the world's number one crypto exchange. Over 275 million users already trust their world-class security. Binance makes starting crypto as simple as it should be, whether it's learning about crypto on Binance Academy or browsing hundreds of assets and viewing your newly created portfolio in a clear, easy-to-track dashboard. Binance helps you go at your own pace. For hardcore traders, Binance Pro opens up industry-leading services for trading professionals with fully bespoke trading products, along with a suite of white-glove services for VIP and institutional clients. Need support? 24/7 customer service is on hand whenever you need it. And with some of the lowest fees and deepest liquidity in the market, it's no surprise why over 275 million users trust Binance for everything crypto. Download Binance today and get started in minutes. Binance is not available in certain countries, including the United States. Check its terms for more information.
It was crypto week in DC. That's what Trump declared. This is Bo Hine. So he's an executive director in the president's council of advisors, basically for crypto. He said, huge week ahead. It's crypto week in the House. Genius heads to the president's desk. That's the Genius bill. Clarity, another bill, moves to the Senate. Time to make America the crypto capital of the world. Donald Trump echoed those sentiments. You know what? We should start with the Genius bill itself, of course. You guys know we've talked about this for a long time. That is the landmark stablecoin bill that passed in the Senate with a decent majority, even got some Democrat support, and is now in the House, okay? By the time that you are listening to this, I am predicting, I think you are probably predicting, David, that that will have passed. So, assuming that's true, we have the first stablecoin act, the first largest legislative action out of Congress for crypto ever. And this is a milestone moment. I do think Scott Bessent is right. The passage of this bill, we're going to see trillions in stablecoins on chain. Okay. Scott Bessent echoed sentiments of $3 trillion by 2030. So that in and of itself is significant. There was last minute some jockeying around. They tried to package all of these bills together. There were actually three bills. There was the Genius bill. There was the Clarity Act as well. That's, you know, defining what the difference between a commodity and a security with respect to crypto is. And then there was like an anti-central bank digital currency bill. of some sort. And some people wanted to package all of these things together. And so, you know, it was difficult to get all of the Republicans on board last minute. So, you know, Trump tried to knock some heads together in his own party and get some of those that were not voting yes to actually vote yes. So that's probably happened right now, which means huge progress for crypto in the US. So while this was going on, there was also a campaign by some Democrats. This is Representative Maxine Waters. She actually announced an anti-crypto corruption week. And she said, "I'm sounding the alarm." In MSNBC, she wrote an op-ed about this. GOP crypto bills don't just fail to protect consumers. They greenlight Trump's billion-dollar crypto grift and invite the next financial crisis. I think I'm kind of with her on the first part. There's a little bit of a grift going on. I don't know about the second part. And I want to play this clip for you, David. This is Elizabeth Warren on the Genius Act and some of these bills.
Guardrails to make sure that crypto isn't used to blow up our entire economy. So I'm very worried about that, but I want to add one more twist, and that is the Clarity bill has all those problems, but it also has a provision in it that would let any company listed on the New York Stock Exchange opt out of SEC regulation by just digitizing themselves, put themselves on the blockchain, and all of a sudden it turns out that Amazon or Meta or General Motors is no longer governed by the SEC.
You just put yourself on the blockchain and then all the rules just go away. That's how it works. You can just digitize yourself.
Do you hear what she said? That could literally blow up the value of the New York Stock Exchange. All right.
You know,
we still have some holdouts.
That's why I'm in crypto, because I understand that if I'm just on the blockchain, then no rules apply to me. That's what I'm here for.
He's being sarcastic, okay? In case this gets clipped.
You just digitize yourself and you put yourself on the blockchain and then you get to be God.
I'm just kind of annoyed at the doubling down of a clearly losing position. Talk about the anti-corruption, that's fine, but to talk about crypto as if it's going to blow up US capital markets, that is just crazy at this point.
Yeah. Before Elizabeth Warren came after crypto, my family was very pro Elizabeth Warren. And I'm like, oh, okay, sure. She's like anti big banks. I'm like kind of into that. And then when she goes on crypto, I'm like, oh, wait, you're just lying about
good
stuff.
Yeah.
You're just lying through your teeth. None of that's true. And now I can't trust anything that you say ever. And now whenever my family is talking about Elizabeth Warren, I'm like, bro, she's a snake. Why are you guys supporting her?
Yeah, it's pretty disappointing, I think, to some that are watching this. David, tell me about the Pump ICO, because I don't think disappointing is the word we would use for that.
Some people are disappointed about that.
Oh, really?
Actually. Yeah.
Oh, paying attention.
This is why I'm doing this section.
Okay.
It started off pretty good. And we are now down a decent bit. So we are coming in at a $2 billion market cap. Oh, wow. Wait, really?
Well,
is it down that much?
Okay,
No. Yeah, market cap, $5.6 billion fully diluted. Okay, so they're doing fine.
Well, why are people... The way I saw this was basically they had an ICO on chain. Mm-hmm. It was a successful ICO. It was filled in like, I don't know, 6 minutes or something like this?
12 minutes.
You tell me.
Like
12 minutes. Yeah. Okay. Yep. And a chain didn't go down. Some of this activity happened on exchanges. Some of this happened on Solana. Yeah. There is like some sort of a rev share component. It's not 100%, but 25%.
Yeah, so they announced, they started doing their initial buybacks and then the token pumped up to its like now current all-time highs, which, I mean, the token's actually not volatile. I remember talking about how it's going to be volatile at the start. I was actually wrong about that. The token price has become is very liquid and it's pretty stable in the grand scheme of things.
Okay, so why are people mad? Who's mad?
Well, because it went down. It went down 10% while ETH went up 20%.
Okay.
And so like it didn't track. I don't think you actually tracked beta. If you did the ICO, I think you're okay. But since launch, it hasn't done anything. So I think people's expectations are dashed. Just to put out some stats, this makes Pump the third largest ICO in history. Raised $600 million. EOS is number one. No one's ever going to beat that. $4.1 billion in 2017. That was also crime. Telegram did $1.7 billion in 2019. And now Pump is now number three at $600 million. I mean, there's a lot more stats here. Overall, I think it's successful and the buyback is pretty cool and we could see more of that. But I think people were having higher expectations than what happened. I do have some breaking news, Ryan, stuff that's not in the agenda. So we're actually going to go back into Ethereum conversation because BlackRock's iShares ETH treasury just filed for ETH staking. While we're recording. So they have filed to have ETH staking in the ETH ETF, the the BlackRock iShares for the ETH ETF for staking. And well, BlackRock gets what it wants.
That's not going to help the ETH pump ratio there, David. So, you know, I guess.
Yeah, the ETH pump ratio.
Yes.
Are you looking at the ETH pump ratio?
No, dude. You made reference to it. I'm trying to riff off something you did. Also, Binance doing
Binance is doing a launchpad. Okay, actually, perhaps one of the reasons why Pump hasn't had the stellar performance is this other launchpad called Bonk continues to maintain volumes against Pump. And so it's taken a little bit of the wind out of the sails of Pump. And then also Binance has unveiled its own launchpad on BNB chain, 4.meme. Remember 4?
Yeah.
4.meme is now the Pump fund of BNB. Okay. And so that's out there. And then Ryan, I'm going to read you a headline and you're going to guess what year it's from. Snoop Dogg sells $12 million of NFTs in 30 minutes. What year is this headline from?
Yeah, I mean, that I know it's now. That just happened this week. But if I were to hear that in isolation, that would be so, you know, 2021 coded. Mm-hmm. That's what was happening all of the time.
So this was on the Ton blockchain, and this is part of the sticker pack. So the stickers you can use in Telegram can be like unique fungible assets, non-fungible assets. The tokens in the collection included vintage cars, swag bags, a digital dog, a marijuana-related objects, of course, and a mix of other items and symbols. So it's a Telegram gift that people can purchase. And because it was on Ton, it's integrated into Telegram. Yeah, $12 million in 30 minutes by selling stickers, NFT stickers on Telegram.
I'm not feeling bullish on the JPEGs these days, David. You know, it was
you're not a buyer of a lit blunt, Ryan.
It's been a hard 4 years on the lit blunts JPEGs. Okay, so I'm gonna wait this one out. I'm gonna let other people go first. David, this was actually big. Okay, this is Shane Copeland. Do you remember? November? It was November of last year because it was just
right before the election. Yeah.
No, it was eight days after the election. Okay.
After the election.
So Shane Copeland, from the founder of Polymarket, the FBI just showed up at his apartment. I believe he's in New York. Busted in without due process, without a warrant, arrested him and took a whole bunch of his equipment.
Including his phone. Yeah.
Including his phone. This is the founder of Polymarket. Obviously, we talk about Polymarket all the time. Incredibly successful prediction market. This is a startup founder in the US. Okay, an update on that story. This is from Shane. 8 months ago on election night, we were on top of the world after Polymarket called the election. You remember that? 8 days later, the FBI broke down my door at 6 a.m. and took all of my computers and phones looking for anything that could imply foul play. While traumatic, it etched the story of Polymarket's accuracy and enduring resistance into the history of American politics. And today, here's the news part. I'm happy to announce that this the chapter of the story is over. After cooperating and engaging, we've been cleared of any wrongdoing. Justice prevailed. Okay, so the FBI was like, oops, sorry.
That's nuts.
You didn't actually do anything. But what kind of evidence did they have busting into his house at 6 a.m. in the morning and confiscating all of his stuff? Is that not crazy to you? And let me ask you this. Do you think that the outcome of this investigation would have been different under a different president?
I don't know. I don't know how to think about that. I don't want to think about that.
Right?
It doesn't make me feel good to think about that. I do enjoy the juxtaposition of an application that speaks truth to power, gets harassed by the FBI, and then the FBI just has to let him go and be like, you did nothing wrong. But like this technology that's anti-authoritarian gets authoritarian. Like the eye of Sauron gets pointed straight at Shane Copeland. And then because at least we're in a good country with a good court system, Shane gets through that process as just completely scot clear.
Brian Armstrong says, this was one of the most egregious examples of lawfare from the last administration that should never have been possible in America. Imagine having your door broken down for predicting an election. The onus was on the government to prove there was something worth pursuing here, and they failed to do that. This is how you lose trust in institutions. All right. So that's good news, though. He was exonerated. Shane Copeland. We got another trial that started this week. This is the trial of Roman Storm, the Tornado Cash trial. And as you'll recall, Roman Storm faces charges of a conspiracy to commit money laundering, conspiracy to violate U.S. sanctions, conspiracy to operate an unlicensed money transmitting business at a maximum sentence of 45 years in prison. 45 years, David. The stakes are incredibly high. Roman Storm raised a whole bunch of funds from the crypto community. He still needs more, I believe, because this trial is going even longer than everyone suspected. There is a judge in the case, Catherine Polka Falela. She is not exactly crypto favorable, okay? Not exactly, it seems like, favorable to Roman Storm's case. Of course, we don't know for sure, but this has been indicated from some of the pretrial statements and some of the things she allowed in the trial and things she didn't. So the prosecution, this is the government in this case, is alleging and trying to prove that Roman Storm turned a blind eye or he enabled some of the criminal activity that happened on Tornado Cash. Whereas the defense is, of course, saying, no, this is a decentralized, open protocol. Roman Storm had no ability, no control over how third parties would actually use it. This is similar to, you know, HTTPS, the internet, cryptography. Criminals, good guys can use it. It's a tool. Bad guys can use it as well. And this case is ongoing.
So yeah, like Ryan said, this case, this court case has just started. So we're going to be continuing to watch this and we'll provide updates probably towards the end of every weekly roll-up moving forward just to keep an eye on this. I don't feel like anyone really knows what the outcome here is, which is kind of the scary thing. The fact that this is like close at all to Roman Storm losing is automatically scary. It definitely doesn't deserve to have anything happen to him. And so it's something that we're going to be keeping an eye on moving forward over the next 4 weeks, I think, is how long this case is expected to take. So we wish the best for Roman Storm, and we'll provide more updates as they come.
Guys, we got to end with this, of course. You know, even though it's been bullish on the week, none of this has been financial advice. Crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.